Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
So he got his deal. Mm-hmm. Atlanta, what's going on? It's Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. We're talking about our boy Drake London. We have been talking about this for probably the last few months. And look, the Falcons said we have to address a bunch of other things, including the draft and free agency, and then the draft. And we know this is on the table, but we're not quite worried about it. And, Mike, they get a deal done, quiet as kept. His agent made this announcement yesterday and put it out there to all the insiders, and then it got out. But after we got off the air, Drake London, four-year extension, $141 million. It's worth up to $150. So what was your first impression when you heard this last night once we got to the crib?
It is interesting because we said, you know, that sounds about where we were talking about. You know, we said, you know, it'll probably reset the market. You know, it might upset some people if he's making $1 million more in totality than a Justin Jefferson. But he's certainly a guy that we know what he is here. He's a heart and soul guy. He's worth it. And again, every time, you know, a couple of listeners pointed out, you know, the cap's going up. So the market's going to reset. And he is a top 10 wide receiver. Now, he's shown he can be a top four. You know, in a top three. It's just, unfortunately, a horrible quarterback play. He had some injuries last year, but we know what this guy means to the team. So, to me, it makes perfect sense. You know what I mean? I don't think it's one that there's like a sticker shock. Maybe some Falcon fans, but you and I always said this is where it was going to be.
Yeah, look, I think this is a fair deal for both. Fair for the Falcons. They didn't overpay. And I think it's fair for Drake, who is getting the respect he deserves as being one of the top receivers in the league. So, if you look at it from that standpoint, look, this is a good deal for both parties involved. And then the other thing is, look, the Falcons, just like every other team, and this is why I don't worry about the cap, it's going up.
Right.
It continues to go up. And so for everybody who's worried about what Bijan's going to get, don't. There will be plenty of money to take care of Bijan. Well, what about Pitts? Well, if Pitts plays well enough, Mike, we can have this conversation after
the
season.
I mean, worst case, you tag him again, you know, or you find out if you want to go and give him a big deal, or he craps the bed, doesn't do what you were looking for with Stefanski's offense. Bijan will be the next one, but that's it. Think about this. And then the only guy in the foreseeable future down the road, you know, if you really get, is Bergeron, you want to lock up, you know, is your guard. That would be another one. It won't be as big as Lindstrom's deal, but it'll be a good size deal. But then, you know, you're thinking about, okay, Pierce, Jalen Walker in 4 years, 5 years, you know, you're fine.
Yeah.
You're in a good spot. That was part of the reason they didn't go crazy in free agency this year, not that they should have in the first place.
No, but I also think, like, again, that's so far away. 4 years. What if I told you when Michael Penix was drafted that he'd have another knee injury and we'd be contemplating whether or not we're going to pay him or not?
Right.
Like, well, that's so far away, but I hear you. Like, I get
But I do think in the immediacy of Ian Cunningham coming and bringing in the capologist from the Eagle is to get us right. You know what I mean? We were leaking a little bit at the end of the Kirk Cousins deal, I thought.
Yeah.
And we're in the middle, right in the middle of the NFL as far as cap space.
When I go back and think about it, I said this to our boy Dylon out there. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And he said, you know, we were talking about this Drake London situation. And I said, well, who have we paid?
Right.
Who have the Falcons paid? Like, they went and signed Kirk Cousins, which everybody freaked out. $100 million, which we now know is the kind of the going rate, even if you're going to be a guy only there for a few years. But that's the only time. Think about it. Since Matt Ryan, the Julio deal, Mike, we're going back, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
So it's been a while. And to your point about Ian Cunningham, this is the first deal for him and Matt under this new regime. It's Dukes and Bell, guys. We talk about Drake London's new deal. Are you happy about it? And for me, this is how I'm looking at this. You took him eighth overall, 2022 draft. He's panned out. He's worked. And he's worked without great quarterback play. Like, that's the other part about this. If he had Matt under center for the last 3 or 4 years, what would his numbers look like? So I think he's a productive dude. He's tough, Mike. We talk about his IQ and all the things. He fits what we want to do. This, to me, was a no-brainer. It was just a matter of when it was going to happen. And what is the average, 35.2?
Yeah, that's it. So he's a guy that we said, you just touched on it, does the hard work, does the run blocking, makes the tough catch. You know, it's just, you cannot, some of the controllables are beyond his control. He had some horrible quarterback plays first 2 years in the league. Chris Lindstrom becomes the biggest hit right now on our cap. Chris Lipscomb, Jesse Bates, then Drake, then Jake Matthews. And again, eventually this will be budgeted for next year. But then, as you said, it's really Bijan is the next big high-ticket item and or maybe a, you know, what Bergeron's deal looks like. But this is, you know, a good place to be in. And now we find out, do we have our quarterback in the building? We got two guys battling all year long to see if they can establish themselves. Otherwise, we go get a quarterback next year in the draft.
All right.
And then that's also financial control.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Pecking order, if you're into those things, and it doesn't matter, man. I think it's about respect when you get, you know, become one of the top five guys in the league at your position and you're paid as such. JSN is paid higher, right? Mm-hmm. In Jigba. Chase has got a little bit more. There are not many guys on this list. And so for Drake, I think he should be pretty happy. By the way, he's going to play on his fifth-year option this year. This doesn't kick in until next year. So it's 16.8 this year on his fifth-year option for Drake London, which was picked up last season. And then for Bijan, they've already picked up his fifth-year option before next season, which will be 2027. Mike, where's this team in 2030? Because that's when this contract is up. For Drake.
I mean, that's hopefully we're winning the divisions. We're, you know, playing in conference championships. Like, obviously, the big dream is the Super Bowl. But until we get the quarterback squared away, you can't make that prediction. You know, every team that goes to the Super Bowl has got a great quarterback, unless you're the Ravens or the Bucks back in the day and you had a mediocre quarterback and the best defense on the planet. So we've got a really good defense. We just got to establish the QB. Once we have some clarity on the QB, Carl, I don't know where we'll be. I shudder to think that we're still having this playoff drought, because then we are the Jets, and then you're going on 14 years.
That's crazy. I mean, I'm just saying, like, in 2030, that's when this four-year, potentially $150 million deal is up. It's 141. But where are we? Is Drake then the best wide receiver in the league? Are we dominating, to Mike's point, the division? How many, you know, how close are we to a Super Bowl? It's just interesting to think about, because all of these things could play out and we still might not have the answer at quarterback. And Mike, right. If we don't, let's be honest. Let's just say things don't work out for either one of the guys that are in the building right now. We hope they do. You're going to draft a quarterback and then hope, what, in 3 years or 2 years that he's good enough to... You know, that's what you're saying, right? Because over.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you don't want to be in that. That's why we're hoping that somebody emerges. I don't know how you want to put it on odds, 5-1, 10-1 for Tua and vice versa for Penix. Both guys have got to learn this offense. Both guys got to stay healthy. Penix, you know, the knee thing, it's part of the equation. I'm not trying to trigger the Penix fans. We've already had that discussion. But, yeah, we may find – look, if things go really off the rails, and you and I are talking about Arch Manning starting like Thanksgiving – you know, that's a different set of circumstances. And the hype will be insane, and the guy should be ready to go when he comes into the NFL. He will not wait. He will not sit on the bench. Don't know. We might be where we're always picking, which is middle of the road on the cusp of the playoffs or in the playoffs. So we may have to move up to try to get a quarterback. But if we're in the playoffs, and somebody did their job at QB, and you're probably happy about it.
Yeah, and that's where I hope we are. By the way, this is a big swing for the Falcons, because this is, again, of all the guys that we've drafted over the last few years, this is the first big investment. Right, and we're talking about the guys that are coming, the Pitts, the Drakes, or should I say the Bijans, some of the linemen Mike mentioned. But this is the first big swing, and hopefully this pays off. This is taking care of your core guys and guys that have been there, and you have, again, not only drafted, Mike, but you've invested in the development. And so for Drake, even though these coaching staffs have changed, guys, he's a player. And that's the thing. It doesn't take long to see if a guy can get it done or not, and Drake has shown that. 404-726-0929. You guys can hit us up. Let us know what you're thinking. Mike Bell, ATL on social media. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes and the radio show. Dukes and Bell, 929. Follow the radio station at 929 The Game. Stay up on everything that's going on, guys. Breaking news like this happening late yesterday as we got off the air and all the other things. Tonight we got Game 1, Knicks Spurs. We're going to talk to our guy Brian Geltzeiler coming up from Sirius Satellite XM Radio, and he also does a bunch of NBA shows. We will get his take on this. Spurs are 4.5-point favorite on the at home, should I say, Mike, against the Knicks. I don't think that should be a surprise. Somebody said to me today, they were like, why are the Spurs favorite? I said it to you guys yesterday. They've been the better team. I think the perception, Vegas, Mike, 62 wins, I think it was. Then they go through a gauntlet of teams in the West. I just feel like most people think the Spurs may be the better team. Now, they got to prove it, but being at home, I think that's what this is going to be. When the Knicks get back home, they're going to be favored in this series.
But the thing is, a guy that's a big part of how you're going to try to at least, you know, cool Wemby off a little bit and keep him flustered is Mitchell Robinson. And then there was conflicting reports about the nature of this pinky injury, that it's more than just the pinky, it's part of the hand. I mean, the pinky is part of the hand, technically. But it started with Brian Windhorst, and then initially reported as a finger injury. Turns out to be something a lot worse. He's already had the surgery. He's questionable for tonight's game. But, you know, with all due respect to Kat, I mean, Kat, I don't expect him to be bullying Wemby. He can try, but I thought the guy that was going to kind of be the pest when it comes to Wemby was going to be Mitchell Robinson. So I'm curious about how effective he'll be in that role. Offensively, you know he can't shoot, but he's good in the paint.
He is. Do you limit his minutes to say I might need him in games 5, 6, and 7 more than I do in game 1, 2, and 3? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to overplay Mitchell to put him in jeopardy of maybe not being able to do some of the things we're going to need him for later in this series. I don't know.
I mean, all he really needs to be doing is using his butt and his hips to be keeping Wemby away from the basket and try to pester him. But Brian Winters, who's now an orthopedist, calls this the boxer's fracture. You ever hit the heavy bag, you don't tape up properly, and that finger goes down that side, and basically it's part of your hand. So he's saying now it's more serious. The Knicks are saying it's not as serious as Windhorse is making it out to be.
Did he hit somebody?
No, I think it was just on. I just think it was contact on the rim. I think it was just in the process of beating the Cavs, and then it turns out, oh my God, I broke my pinky.
Yeah,
or he did it at practice.
Yeah, I just, when I heard that, he's right, because if that injury is a result of you punching something, usually,
right,
it's not just, oh, I banged my pinky and now my hand's broken. But we'll see. That's a big part of tonight's storyline. We'll talk with Brian Geltzeiler coming up. Also, later in the show, we'll get Grant on. Braves find a way to hold on. Were you nervous last night? You a little nervous?
Well, I'm always nervous when Iglesias puts a tying run on base. I mean, that's you know, where it's, you know, where you're living. 8 earned runs now in the last 2 games. You talked to Grant about Bryce Elder. You know, there's some pitching, maybe pitching to too much contact. Maybe that's something he'll want to tweak a little bit. But I do also like the fact that Walt Weiss lets him go into the 7th inning.
Yeah.
Right?
So, you let him go.
And then you got a guy that you know can put out the fire, and Robert Suarez. That was cool. Strange home run for Matt Olson. The wind was blowing clearly out to right. They were infatuated with the launch angle that looked like basically hitting an 8-iron, 49 degrees, and it just kept going and going and just bloop right over the concrete wall at the top of the fence. So Matt Olson, you know, helps you get the win. But Elder is just doing his thing now. Just let's not get the bullpen tax with Grant Holmes tonight. We'll talk more about it with Grant.
All right, that's on the way, guys. When we come back, though, who do you like? Final start tonight.
Who do you like?
Well, I'm going to tell you, and I'm curious.
I want to know now. I want to know now.
If Hawks fans go,
I won't be ignored, Carl.
You know what? They beat us. I don't mind if the Knicks win. Do you feel that way, Hawks
fans? I feel the exact same way. If someone's going to go on to win the championship, I'd like us to be the only guys that gave them a game, right, in the playoffs. Game 2.
All right. We'll get back. We'll come back. Brian Geltzeiler's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Talk to our guy, Geltz. Brian Geltz, SiriusXM, NBA Radio. He's all over the NBA Finals time, Jason Bell. And Brian, man, it's good to have you back on the show. We're just talking about, you know, the favorites in game 1, and it's the Spurs, and some people are surprised at that. I'm not. I have felt like they've been the better team all season, and then they proved that against OKC. But I guess the question begins with, what are the Knicks going to try to do against Wemby? How do you this down? How do you contain it if you can? What do you think the plan is from Mike Brown?
Well, let's start with this. I think the Knicks' concerns regarding Victor Wembanyama have less to do with what he does on the offensive end of the floor and more what he does on the defensive end of the floor. The one thing they have to be concerned with in this series is how are they going to keep Victor Wembanyama on the Spurs defensive end of the floor away from Jalen Brunson. That's what the Knicks have to worry about, because in so many scenarios, it worked for the Knicks to run a Brunson Towns two-man game. I don't think that's going to work here, because ultimately, if you look what Victor Wembanyama did to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the Oklahoma City series, SGA and Jalen Brunson are probably the players in the NBA. And he took SGA out of his rhythm in mid-range, mostly because he was a shadow. Everywhere that SGA went, Wembanyama was right behind the defender, making him have to change normal mid-range shots that he takes. Guys, don't forget what Jalen Brunson did to Embiid in the Philly series. He destroyed him, and he destroyed him in the mid-range, and it was doing off defense. With Wemby, Wemby can drop and come out on you at the same time because he's so damn long. And that's going to be the biggest problem the Knicks have, is how to get Brunson going and make sure he can find spots that he's comfortable scoring in and keep Wembanyama away from him. Well, how do you do that? The way you do that is Karl Towns has to be a massive factor for moment one. They're going to most likely start Wembanyama on Josh Hart. So that way they'll let Hart shoot threes. And you're going to have a guy like Devin Vassell on Karl Anthony Towns. Towns has to, whether it's scoring, shooting, driving, passing, Towns has to be the offensive hub from the jump for the Knicks. Now, again, the Knicks have been very comfortable doing that. That's how they beat Atlanta. That's how they swept Philly. That's how they swept Cleveland. Everything running through Towns at the elbow. So the Knicks are comfortable doing that. But what the Knicks ultimately are going to have to do is make San Antonio have to say, you know what, we can't guard Towns with a smaller guy. We have to commit to Wembanyama on Towns. Now, again, there's other counters San Antonio can make. They can decide to play two bigs with Luke Kornet. But if I'm the Knicks, I'm enjoying a Towns on Kornet matchup. I don't think Kornet can guard Karl Towns from a physical and athletic standpoint. So ultimately, finding a way to get Wemby over to Karl Towns and keeping Towns and Brunson on opposite end of the floors is going to be, to me, the single biggest factor in what happens in the series. If the Knicks do that successfully, they can win the series. If they do not do that successfully, there's no way they win the series.
The baritone of Brian Geltzeiler with us, guys, from SiriusXM, talking hoops here on Dukes and Bell on the Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline. Do you put stock into the Mitchell Robinson pinky slash hand injury being a major thing? Because how much was he going to be involved in, obviously, in disrupting Wemby?
He's going to be, to answer your second part of your question, he's going to be very, very involved. And I think this hand injury has been a little bit overblown in the respect that what exactly do you need Mitchell Robinson to do out there? Well, you need him to play defense. He's going to be able to do that, whether the hand's good or not. You need him to be able to defensive rebound and offensive rebound. You need him to be able to catch lobs and be able to handle dribble handoffs. I don't think it's going to be an issue rebounding or catching lobs. I think, you know, dribble handoff wise, if I'm San Antonio, I'm taking a shot at that hand every time he does a dribble handoff to test it a little bit and see if I can send him to the sidelines. The other thing is this, and not that he was shooting free throws well in the first place, but having an injured pinky on his right hand makes him that much worse a free throw shooter. But what's been interesting about the hack and Mitch strategy is the Knicks have baited other teams with it. They certainly did that to the Cavs, where they put Mitchell Robinson out there. They were willing to live early in a quarter with the fouling of Mitchell Robinson and Robinson missing all his free throws just to get the other team in a penalty. Then they sit Robinson down, play aggressive going to the basket, and every time there's a touch foul, Mitch is shooting two free throws. So the Knicks have kind of used the hack of Mitch to work it back in their favor. Wouldn't surprise me if they do that all over again. Again, I think Robinson's going to be the same factor he would have been otherwise, whether the pinky's injured or not.
All right, let's talk about the real, because this is why I think the Spurs have an advantage. Geltzeiler, tell me about Shin Penny. Tell me about Stephon Castle. Tell me about Dylan Harper. Tell me about Vessel. All these guys that nobody else is talking about. Everybody's focused on Wemby. His supporting cast is really good, and they all defend.
So you're 100% right about that. But let's go through these guys one at a time. All right? First of all, I'm going to tell you right now with De'Aaron Fox, I think Mikal Bridges is going to guard him. I think Mikal Bridges is going to do a really, really good job on him. And especially with the fact that we know he's not 100%, I don't see him being a major factor in the series. Castle's a different story, because I know we've heard a lot of talk about OG Anunoby spending time guarding Victor Wembanyama, and he will spend a little bit of time guarding Victor Wembanyama. He's going to have to guard Castle. Castle, you know, outside the first two games with 20 turnovers without Fox in there for the Spurs, Castle was a handful for OKC. Mm-hmm. And when I say a handful, you're talking about really strong defensive players, guys like Dort and Cason Wallace, and to a lesser extent, Caruso, who's a very good defensive player, but not as strong as those other two guys. Castle threw those guys around like they were ragdolls. Goes where he wants, when he wants. The only guy in the Knick roster that can keep him from doing that is OG Anunoby. And I think you'll see Anunoby spend a lot of time on Castle in this series. The Knicks are not sleeping on the impact Castle can have in this series, because they just saw what he did to OKC. The Knicks, I think, will handle Vassell okay, because they're going to end up most likely with Josh Hart guarding him, and I think that's a good matchup for New York. The key guy you just mentioned is Julian Champagne, because the Knicks need a place to hide Jalen Brunson. They're going to choose to hide Brunson on Champagne, in my opinion, just because Champagne's less of a threat off the dribble and just pretty much a catch and shoot guy. And I think what you're going to see from San Antonio early on is there's going to be some Brunson hunting going on. There's no doubt. And when they Brunson hunt, Champagne's going to be the guy that's going to be put in a lot of pick and roll action, a lot of pick and pop action. And they're going to look to see if they can get him open threes or get Brunson switched onto the ball, which is something that the San Antonio would like very much, that we saw your guys in Atlanta do well early in that series. So they're going to test this. The Knicks, since game four of the Atlanta series, have not switched a ton. They went away from doing a lot of switching. In this series, San Antonio is going to want to get them back to doing some switching. And if they're not, they will look to see if they can use Champagne as well and as much as they can to take advantage of Jalen Brunson's defensive deficiencies. So that's it's going to be a very, very interesting chess match to see how these guys match up. But I think early on in the series, the guy that the Knicks choose to hide Brunson on, and I think it will be Champagne, you're going to see that guy be featured a whole lot by San Antonio. Mm.
It's our man, guys, Brian Geltzahler, NBA insider, talking on Dukes and Bell's Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline. How about the officiating? It is John Goble, Mark Davis, David Guthrie. Are you going to let the Knicks get physical with Wemby? Obviously, Minnesota, Wemby stuck up for himself. He had to, and we know how that played out. But how physical is this thing going to get?
Well, listen, I think what you'll see, and I will get physical. The Knicks are a physical team, and what you did see in the OKC series is how much you can bang around Victor Wembanyama. And I think ultimately the Knicks will do the same kind of stuff OKC did, which is chip on him a little bit. Even if he's kind of coming through the paint and you're not guarding him, take a shot at him. Almost guys like a tight end going out for a pass, chipping on a good pass rusher before they go into their pattern. You're going to see that kind of stuff from the Knicks on Wemby, very similar to how OKC did it. If it's not being called, then I think you'll see the adjustment that Mitch Johnson made for Game 6 and Game 7 of the OKC series, which is to get Wemby the ball more on the perimeter. The contact that is made on Victor Wembanyama is going to be highlighted and called much more when he's on the ball versus off the ball. And I think the Knicks will do everything they can to bang him hard off the ball, even to a point of wanting to force him away from the basket. The Knicks have a unique level of size that OKC did not have. And don't get me wrong, I thought Isaiah Hartenstein largely did a really good job on Wembanyama in that series after he started guarding him in game two. And I think that you can see something similar from Towns and Mitchell Robinson here. But with all that said, I just don't see the officiating being the same huge topic of conversation and the same big issue it was in the OKC series, just for the reason that the Thunder literally on both ends of the ball play the officials. It's part of their game plan. Okay, on offense, they're falling down. It's not just SGA, Jared McCain, whoever else. Every shot, someone's going to the ground trying to draw a foul. And in Game 6 and Game 7, the officials got hip to it, and they were hip enough to it in Game 6 that OKC went away from it in Game 7. The other thing they're doing on the defensive end of the floor is pushing the envelope with how physical they can be. And in the end, when games got called tighter, it wasn't as good for them. The Knicks may push that envelope a little bit, but I think San Antonio is going to do it back on them some. I don't know how successful they'll be. One thing I will tell you, the rebounding margin and what happens in rebounding in a series may be the most important factor as of all, because you heard Reggie Miller pound this in Game 7 on the broadcast, where he talked about the importance of Oklahoma City getting out in transition to get easy baskets, because at the very least, when you're out in transition, the Spurs have not had a chance to set up a defense, putting Wembanyama where they want to put them. You look at what the Knicks did at the end of the Cavs series and how successfully they ran. Well, that running was driven generally by dominant defensive rebounding and great outlet passing by Karl Towns. If the Knicks are dominating defensive glass and getting out quick, that's not a good thing for the Spurs at all, because again, those are possessions that they can't make Wembanyama the center of the defensive universe. On the other hand, look at Game 7 of the OKC Spurs series, where you had pretty much OKC stayed in that game towards the end of the first half. And they were able to stay in that game largely because of offensive rebounding. They did a great job in the first quarter hanging around in that game, getting on the offensive glass. Knicks are one of the better offensive rebounding teams in the league. And if San Antonio doesn't do a good job of keeping them off the glass, they're going to lose the possession game. If they lose the possession game and they lose it consistently, they're likely to lose the series.
Brian Geltzahler joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on the Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline. I just want to be straight and understand what you're saying, because I said it when we played him, and that was Karl Anthony Towns is the most important player. He's not their best player. That's what you're telling me in this series as well, right? It's make or break with Towns.
And Towns is their most important player. Listen, there are times, like OG Anunoby is their most irreplaceable player.
Agreed.
Because if you take OG out, no one
can do what he does.
That skill set.
Yes.
Correct. You take Brunson out, you'll get 70% of Brunson with McBride, but a similar style of play. You take Towns out, and Robinson's a different kind of big man, but nonetheless, you can alter some things where Robinson's a massive and major presence on both ends and on both rims. So those are guys that are going to be replaced. Anunoby isn't. But in this series right now, Karl Towns is the most important player. Because if Towns can be hard to guard for anybody but Wemby, and because if Wembanyama, again, is going to be devoted to Jalen Brunson help, that's going to be the initial strategy. And I would do the same thing if I were Mitch Johnson. I'm going to make Towns beat me until he starts to beat me. But if Towns starts to beat him and they have to go and worry about shutting down Karl Towns, and I know this about Mike Brown and Chris Gent and the offense they run, they will be smart enough in this series to keep Towns and Brunson away from each other on the offensive end of the floor. Make San Antonio have to decide, who are we going to devote Wembanyama to? Which one of those guys? And again, he won't be on the ball with Brunson, but if he's playing Josh Hart and he's hanging around the paint, he will be mid-range support versus Brunson, which is going to make Brunson's life very hard. So yes, I think you're absolutely correct in saying that. I agree with it. Karl Towns is what he does here, how he's used. He is the most important guy for the Knicks in this series.
Great stuff. As always, Brian Geltzeiler, we appreciate you, man. Can't wait to see how these finals play out. We'll get back with you here probably midway through the series just to kind of figure out where things are going. Do you think it goes seven? I'm not going to ask for your winner, but do you think it goes seven?
I'd give you my winner. I think it goes seven. I think San Antonio wins it by the slimmest of margins. I am predicting this to be the best NBA final we've seen since the Cavs came back on the Warriors in 2016. And I say this, that's a big statement, guys, because last year was an awesome series that went seven. I think this is going to be a better series than that. I think it's going to be an amazing series. And the only reason I'm picking San Antonio, two reasons. Number one, the slimmest of margins where home court will help. Number two, if you look back at transcendent all-time great players who are able to make the finals in these spots, especially early in their careers, they have a very good track record. Going back to Magic Johnson, going back to Tim Duncan. So that's where I look at Wembanyama here, and I think that that may be the one thing that puts them over the hump. But I got to tell you, it's going to be a very, very close series either way.
Good stuff, man. We appreciate you stopping by. B, take care.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
Yeah, man. And I agree with him. Mike, you asked who you – I do like the Spurs. I like them in seven as well. I don't think this is going to be a five or six game series. But the Wemby thing, and I just asked this question. Who has the best player in this series?
Well, Wemby is a unique like unicorn of a – once-of-a-generation guy. Cat is a special type of player, too. And Brunson, but you said it. The thing that makes Brunson not the complete package is the defensive liability is on that side. So, yeah, it's going to be. I think it's going to be great. As he nailed it, it's four home games to three in favor of the Spurs, and that should be the margin.
All right, man, we've got plenty more to dive into. Daily downloads coming up. Braves defeat the Blue Jays. Mike was a little bit nervous, and Matt Olson.
Oh, isn't always nervous when Iglesias puts a tying run on base.
Matt Olson does something special. We'll tell you about it next.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a nice prize to give away for you. It's a staycation comfort giveaway from Reliable Heating and Air. It includes a $150 gas card, $150 grocery gift card, and free cooling system tune-up. All compliments of Reliable Heating and Air. Stay tuned. We'll give that away between now and 6. It is Dukes and Bell. Thanks to Brian Geltzeiler for stopping by, talking all things NBA, and we'll get back into those conversations as we move through the day, getting ready for Game 1 tonight. Meanwhile, the Braves do what they've been doing, man, just winning. And last night, it felt like, okay, maybe this might not go our way when the Jays tied it up, but Matt Olson comes through big in the bottom of the sixth inning.
You ever seen Mr. Deeds? Have I seen Mr. D? You talking about the black foot?
Oh, hang on here. How far is this one going to go? Is it Chop House bound?
Keep plot.
Yes! Just enough mustard for Matty-O!
Gotta be the socks.
Now, if you didn't watch the broadcast on Braves Vision, they cut to Wiley Ballard sitting there on the field level, and he's talking about these special socks that have individual toes that Matt Olson wears to prevent turf toe and help exacerbate turf toe injuries. So Wiley is showing the socks, they're talking about it, and then literally he just kind of reaches down and just gets this thing up in the air. The wind carries it over the wall right over the Chop House. So, yeah, it must be the magic socks of Matt Olson last night.
It happened on Lou Gehrig Day, which really was not a lot of conversation, but if you watch baseball around the league, all big league players wore the number 4 patch on their jerseys. And just to put it in perspective, we don't talk about this a lot, but Matt Olson is currently the streak leader, right? Consecutive games in Major League Baseball, 843. So it's not Lou Gehrig, guys, 2130. That's 2,130. And then obviously Cal Ripken surpassed that, but it's still a pretty significant milestone. He talked about Lou Gehrig Day.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, obviously, what people can do to draw awareness to, ALS and, you know, that being tied to Lou Gehrig. And it's special, but, you know, those are real life issues. We're out here playing a game trying to, you know, do what we can to help people out who are actually struggling. So, you know, shout out to those people.
Now, you were talking about, real quick, Bryce Elder's outing. You felt like much contact?
Just pitch into a little more contact. I think sometimes it's simple when you don't have the overpowering velocity. And there was a couple times where he elevated his pitches, got guys to swing at some high stuff, and got them to expand the strike zone. But I think we'll ask Grant what he thinks about it. But just the last couple of games, a lot of contact, you know, against Bryce Elder, and that's where he's got himself in trouble. I mean, it was always, you remember, we used to joke around, that was my beef preseason, he's going to keep the ball in the park. Little did we know that, you know, Greg Maddux basically did a crash course on sinkers, and he's really been dialed up and, you know, mixing up speeds and locations. But hopefully not a big deal, but just get a little nervous. And then, as we also said, Walt Weiss lets him try to get out of that jam in the seventh inning.
6 2/3 for Elder last night. Here's our skipper, Walt Weiss, talking about Elder's outing.
Getting into the seventh, you know, gave up the kind of a wind-blown homer, the two-run homer. The ball was flying to right. You know, the wind usually doesn't affect the ball in this park, but tonight it was. The ball was really going to right field. You know, he did an outstanding job. Seventh inning was a tricky one just because we wanted to stay away from some of the guys, and I give him another day, especially in Dylan Lee's case. Didn't want to pitch Dylan tonight. Same with Kinley, same with Fuentes. Wanted to stay away from those guys. So the seventh inning, you know, we sent Bryce back out with Suarez up, but he got a huge out against Valenzuela. That strikeout was huge. That was going to be his last hitter no matter what, and he gets to punch out, so Suarez only has to get 4 outs. And again, I sent Bryce out for the seventh because I knew I can go get Suarez at any time in the first 3 hitters. If I bring somebody in from the bullpen, then I got to wait to go get Suarez. So that's why I sent Bryce back out there.
Okay.
Smart.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that logic, right? And Robert Suarez has been so good. And then, as we said, just a little nervous in the service with Raisel Iglesias. If you didn't see it last night, 2 guys get on base, and you're like, oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, this isn't happening. But luckily, he's able to pitch his way out of it and launch, get his 11th save, I should say, of the season. But, it's Iglesias. Like, as it has been in previous years, and he's been, you know, by statistics, he's great. He's one of the best closers in baseball. But that makes you nervous. It's a one-run game. So, yeah, I was screaming at the television last night.
Yeah, the Olson home run was big. But, yeah, look, you needed the bullpen to come through. But Elder, again, I like Walt Weiss's strategy there, and it played into our favor. Tonight, right. By the way, it is Grant Holmes on the hill, Patrick Corbin, as his series continues at Truist Park.
One of the weird things about broadcast last night, there's like a big power outage with Toronto. Nobody's hitting home runs. That's been their problem so far. Why they're 3 games under .500. And our old buddy Kevin Gausman from back in 18 and 19, Gausman really had Ronald Acuna kind of on his heels at the plate.
Yeah, look, he's come a long way, man. I mean, Kevin, you know, he's been around a long time. We talk about guys that know how to pitch when they're he knows how to get it done. And I feel like this Toronto team right now, Mike, we talk about teams that are overachieving and underachieving.
They're underachieving, yeah.
Definitely underachieving. This is a roster that they spent a lot of money on. They have star power. They went and signed some pitchers. They feel where Toronto is headed, and it just doesn't right now. But we'll see. We'll see. It's got a long season, but we'll see what happens tonight. Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh.
Look, I don't know if you're watching this, okay? And again, we talked that we're going to get hockey back, and hopefully we do in the ATL. But this series is going to be bananas. And last night, if it's any indicator, Mike, of what this is going to be, back and forth, You know, it came down to the end, and I kept thinking, like, okay, Vegas is done, especially when Carolina went up 2-0.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, it's that I was talking about today on our pregame podcast, which is called Behind the Curtain. Teams on game one, road teams that were down more than one goal were 0-55. So you're not going to get back on the road, and that's the environment up there. It seemed like the Knights, because, you know, they had a little bit longer layoff because they went through Avalanche and swept them, that they were just a little, and they just kind of made uncharacteristic mistakes on the defensive side. They just come firing back, and next, you know, it's 3-2, and then the Carolina Hurricanes come back, and then you get an unbelievable. It's funny because the Hurricane plays 1 second off. Yeah, exactly. Ron Brindamore was not happy with that, and no. He was calling his guys out. But anyway, real quick, I know Carl said we don't talk a lot of hockey. It is interesting that they fire their coach that won a Stanley Cup because they went on this really brutal stretch where they're like 5-12, and they're in a really weak division out west. So they said, you know what? If we're going to go to the nuclear option, they're bringing John Tortorella, who's kind of like Tom Tilly, but he's got championship rings, and he's a hard ass. They bring him in, shock to the system, and they've been off and running ever since.
Tortorella's great. I think maybe it's the spark if they win this. By the way, look, you know, we talk about those moments in series where you go, how do they get over? It might have happened last night. It might have happened.
Well, that's what happened. If you watch the Avalanche series, the Avalanche blow a 3-0 lead, you know, and then forget it. It lights out. You know, you just don't do that in the NHL. And the other thing last night, the team concept, after you get the game, turns out to be the game winning goal, then you got a guy, Marner, who basically lays his body out in the last second to block the shot, takes it right in the thigh, and they're all around him like he scored the winning goal. So I mean, we said it yesterday. I hate the fact we've blown it with hockey. And again, fans didn't blow it, the ownership group blew it. But this is a team which is just, it's fun to watch. And that atmosphere we spoke about yesterday in Vegas is a blast.
It is, man. If you're just joining us, we are reacting to Drake London new deal, guys. Falcons and London agree to a 4-year, $140 million extension. He becomes one of the top five highest paid wide receivers in the league. We're going to talk more about this in 4th and 1. But it's a big deal, man. And, you know, his agent, Andy Kessler, put it out late yesterday that the deal was agreed to. And as I said, I think it's a fair deal. Yeah. Here's the deal, and I think, you know, Mike, for sports fans for many years, been doing this a long time, we all had sticker shock when we'd hear these new deals. I don't think that's the case anymore. I hope it's not. First of all, we realize the impact and the economic impact that sports is having, right? All these sports are healthy. All of them are doing great, and nobody's doing better than the NFL. So when you start talking about these monster contracts, and it's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but it's not the kind of money where you go, oh, my God, you know, and I think that was my first reaction, like, okay, what's the annual average? That's what I wanted to know, because I said, Mike, 32, 35, right. You can't go over that. I just feel like that now you're pushing it, and they didn't. So great job.
No, it's where it needs to be. Now, I haven't seen one Falcon fan say he's not worth it. You know, I mean, yes, it's not his fault in 22 that he's got Marcus Mariota throwing. It's not his fault in 23. It's Desmond Ridder, you know. And then, of course, 24, we had Kirk Cousins' meltdown. So when he's on his game, and that was the year that he had the most reliable delivery system, 1,271 yards, 9 touchdowns, top 4 receiver in the NFL. So you know what he's about. Last year he played, and unfortunately he missed some games, but he also played in games I don't think other guys would have played in. You know, he played in 12 games. He probably should have played in 9, you know, down the stretch. But he's tough. And we, you know, it's funny. We always joke around here in SEC country about Pac-12 guys is soft. He is the ultimate warrior. Remember the first interview we had with him? There's an intensity with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
The kind of dude you want to pay and reward.
Yeah. And I just feel like right now in the league, and you can show me a guy who goes after 50-50 balls better than Drake London. Balls in the air. I'm going to go make a play on it. There are very few guys like Mike Evans, obviously early in his career, but Mike, that's how he made himself because he was 6'5", jumped out of the gym. He could go get those balls. Drake's the same way. He's a very good basketball player, was. And so those moments, Mike, where you go, hey, I just need to go out here and throw it up and hopefully it makes a play. Tell you, be honest with you, that's something Penix and Tua, they could utilize. Like,
right.
I don't have to be perfect with Drake London.
It's what Pitts should be. It's what we think Pitts should be, trying to get separation and using his athleticism in the same token, although he's a tight end. But, yeah, it's $1 million more in totality than Justin Jefferson's deal, but it still averages out, as you said. But right, I think it's right where we discussed. Cap, you brought up in the first segment of the show, keeps going up. And now the next big thing we've got to worry about, again, it's not like we're a team which is jammed, oh, how are we going to pay for this guy or that guy? Eventually, Jake Matthews is going to retire. You've got Lindstrom under contract. It would be Bijan and, I guess, Bergeron, right? Probably the next. And then you've got to figure out what you're going to do with Jesse Bates.
Yeah, if you're going to hold on to him.
As far as the big, if we're talking about, you know, big air money. Quotes, big ticket items.
Yeah,
right.
the big money. Because, again, Xavier Watts, rookie deal. Jalen, rookie deal. JPJ, rookie deal. You're not worried about those guys because you got them under contract.
Right.
All right, we'll talk more about what's going on around the NFL, including, I told you yesterday it was a rumor. It's not. He's actually thinking about it. Mm. We'll get back into that. And Jim Schwartz explains the situation in Cleveland. You got to hear this next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.